5. Hey, Bianna said, as she opened the gates of Everglen to let Sophie in. You made it.
Yeah,
Sophie managed to half smile. Despite her earlier enthusiasm, she was having second thoughts. The gate clanged closed. Somewhere in the distance, a cricket chirped. Sophie pulled on the sleeves of her pale yellow tunic, glad Bianna was also dressed casual. Though Bianna's turquoise tunic had pink beaded flowers embroidered around the edges and a pink satin sash.
So, what are we going to do?
Bianna stared at the ground as she shrugged.
Okay. Is your family around?
Bianna's eyes narrowed.
I knew you'd ask that.
What?
I know you like my brother.
What?
Please, it's pretty obvious.
He's my friend.
Sure, she liked him, but she didn't like him.
This was a bad idea.
Bianna grabbed her arm to stop her from walking away.
Wait. I'm sorry, it's just... girls always use me to get to my brother. I guess I sort of expect it.
Sophie could imagine how annoying that might get, but still.
That's not what I'm doing. And you invited me over, remember?
I know.
Bianna stared at her hands, wringing her fingers so tight it looked painful.
Can we maybe start over?
Sophie bit her lip.
I guess we can try.
Bianna exhaled, seeming relieved.
Good.
Her eyes lit up.
I know. We can give each other makeovers. I have all the serums to change our hair color, and we can try on some of my mom's gowns.
Wrestling the vermilion would have sounded more fun, but Sophie couldn't think of a polite way to say that. Fortunately, she didn't have to.
Makeovers,
Keith scoffed behind them.
You girls sure know how to have fun. Maybe you can braid each other's hair and giggle about boys while you're at it.
Sophie spun around to face him, and she felt her heart flutter when she noticed Fitz standing next to him. Keith grinned.
Actually, maybe that last part is a good idea. You could get the dirt on Foster. Find out which guy makes her heart go pitter-patter.
That would be none,
Sophie insisted, hoping her face wasn't as red as it felt.
That's what they all say. But deep down, girls always have one guy they can't take their eyes off. Isn't that right, Fitz?
Why are we talking about this? Fitz complained. Keith shrugged.
Just saying.
What are you guys doing here? Bianna asked, shooting Fitz a pointed look.
We came to see if you guys want to play Base Quest,
Keith answered for him.
What's Base Quest? Sophie asked, grateful for the subject change.
Only the most awesome game ever. I call Foster for my team,
Keith announced. Jealousy flared in Bianna's eyes as Keith wrapped an arm around Sophie's shoulders. Sophie shrugged away from him.
How about we play Boys Against Girls?
Fitz explained the rules. One team guarded its base, while the other team launched a raid. If the questers made it to the base without getting tagged, they won.
Light leaping isn't allowed, but special abilities can be used, Fitz added, looking right at Sophie, like he was saying it for her benefit.
That's not fair. Sophie and I don't have...
Bianna's voice trailed off when Fitz shot her a warning look.
Fine, but you guys have to quest first.
Sophie chose to be sentry at the vivid red tree they'd picked as their base. She didn't like being the last defense, especially considering how fast Fitz and Keith could run. But she didn't know the grounds, so it made more sense to let Bianna try to hunt them down. Plus, if abilities were allowed, she knew how to keep tabs on the boys. Tiergan had taught her how to track where thoughts came from. Most telepaths could only isolate a general area, but Sophie could nail down the exact spot. She'd never tried it on moving targets, but it was worth a shot. So as soon as Bianna ran off, she opened her mind and listened. Fitz's thoughts were softer than ever. He must be trying to block her. But Keefe's were loud and clear. He was thinking about the lake. So she listened in that direction and instantly felt their presence. She couldn't think of a better way to explain it. Even Tyrgan didn't understand. Her mind somehow touched them through the air, telling her exactly where they were. She needed a tremendous amount of concentration to stay connected as they snuck through the meadow. But she didn't lose them, even when they dashed into the forest to slip by Bianna. Her head ached, but she held on, following them through the trees. When their thoughts focused on the base, her heart thundered. They were closing in. She took off, not sure if she was seeing with her eyes or theirs, as she plowed through the trees. She didn't know where she was or how long she ran, or if she felt anything, until her hands connected with skin and her vision cleared. Fitz and Keefe stared at her with wide eyes. She gripped their arms.
"How did you do that?" Keefe demanded. "You ran straight to us, like you knew where we were."
She racked her brain for a credible excuse.
"Heard you."
"Heard us how?"
Keefe cocked his head, glancing at her hand on his arm, then back at her.
"Hiding something, Foster?"
"She probably heard you crashing through the bushes like a Sasquatch," Fitz said, coming to our rescue.
"I think the whole world did." "No, I don't think that's what it is."
"You're just mad because you lost," Bianna teased, catching up with them. "I can't believe Sophie tagged you both on her own. She can be my base quest partner anytime." She grinned, and Sophie couldn't help smiling back. She was actually having fun. With Bianna, of all people. Who would have guessed?
"Do my eyes deceive me? Or is that Sophie Foster?"
Alden asked behind them.
"We've missed you around here,"
Della added, rushing over and wrapping Sophie up in her arms. Sophie sank into the hug, swallowing the emotions rising in her chest. She hadn't seen Alden or Della since she moved to Havenfield, and she hadn't realized how much she missed them. She took a deep breath to clear her head, and her nose tingled.
"Whoa, you smell like smoke. Is there a fire?"
Della glanced at Alden as she pulled out of the hug, backing a few steps away. Alden cleared his throat.
"Just something we're looking into. No reason to worry."
Sophie repressed a sigh. "No reason to worry" seemed to be Alden's favorite words. Then again, he'd never found anything suspicious about the San Diego fires. Or if he had, it hadn't been important enough to hit the gossip circles. Sophie was sure Morella would have heard otherwise.
"So, what are you guys up to?" Della asked.
"Getting stomped in base quest," Keefe grumbled. "You should have seen it. Sophie tagged us out like she knew where we were."
Alden glanced at Fitz, who gave the slightest nod, before he grinned at Keefe.
"Sounds like someone's not happy about losing." "I'd just like to know how she did it. But she insists on being all mysterious."
Keefe narrowed his eyes at Sophie.
"She still hasn't explained how she slammed Fitz into the wall yesterday."
Sophie flushed, and when she met Alden's eyes, she could see clear concern.
"Fitz said he was going to talk to you about that," she said quietly. "Any theories?"
"None that makes any sense,"
Alden admitted. A second of silence passed. Then Della came to the rescue.
"Besides, we girls never reveal our secrets. How else can we keep you boys on your toes? So, who's staying for dinner?"
She glanced at Sophie. "Sorry, I told Adeline I'd be home. Maybe next time." She flushed when she realized she'd invited herself over. But Bianna smiled.
"Sounds good." "Do you need to use the Leapmaster?" Alden asked.
"No,
Grady and Adeline gave me a home crystal. She held up a long silver chain that hung to her waist. The crystal pendant only had a single facet, the path to Havenfield. They'd given it to her that morning, apologizing for not giving her one sooner. She really felt like family.
"Don't stay away too long this time," Alden told her. "We've missed you around here."
"I've missed you guys too. I'll see you soon." On Monday, Bianna, Keith, and Fitz sat with Sophie at lunch. Jensi and Mirella kept giggling and staring at their visitors, Mirella especially. Dex spent the entire lunch sulking at his tray. "Hey, Dex," Sophie said, trying to draw him out of his funk. "Can you come over after school today?" He glared at Fitz before his eyes met hers.
"You don't have other plans?"
She ignored his snipe. "I was hoping you'd tutor me in alchemy. I'm going to need help before midterms, and you're the best alchemist I know." Dex straightened up at the compliment.
"Sure, if you really need me."
Keith wagged a finger at her.
"Aw, don't go getting good at alchemy, Foster. Who else can we count on to destroy Lady Galvin's capes?"
"Don't worry, I don't think Sophie can ever get good at alchemy," Mirella told him. "Do you have any idea how many things she's exploded?"
"There have been other explosions?"
He flashed Sophie a wicked grin.
"This I have to hear."
Sophie sighed as Mirella filled everyone in on her almost weekly explosions. Now she had a reason besides Bronte to get better at alchemy. If sitting with Keith was going to be a regular thing, she would never hear the end of the jokes. Keith got detention a week later, so she was off the hook for the teasing. But it was a lucky break, because even with Dex's expert instructions, she couldn't get the hang of alchemy. She almost caught her room on fire twice before Dex moved their practice experiments to the caves that lined the beach at the base of Havenfield's cliffs. Rock couldn't burn, and the ocean was nearby if they needed it. And they needed it. A lot. She even caught Dex's tunic on fire. Maybe it was because the rules of alchemy defied every rule of chemistry she'd ever learned. Or maybe it was because the ingredients were so foreign. But 2 weeks away from exams, she was panicking. Her only chance of passing would be if she knew what would be on the test so she could practice until she got it right. Too bad Lady Galvin refused to give a study guide. Sophie was fairly certain she was hoping she'd fail, so she'd be rid of her. Of course, Sophie could always read her mind. The thought was so terrible, she was ashamed for even thinking it. But no one would ever know. And she'd still have to complete the assignment for the test without any help. Narrowing down what to study wasn't so wrong, was it? Plus, if she didn't pass, Bronte would have what he needed to get her expelled. Maybe even shipped off to... She refused to finish the terrifying thought. The fear made up her mind. At her next alchemy session, she dropped her books. She kept her back to Lady Galvin as she bent to retrieve them, and, before she could wimp out, she closed her eyes and concentrated on her thoughts. It was easier than she had planned. Lady Galvin had the exam on her mind, so Sophie didn't have to probe deeper into her memories. She was deciding between making Sophie turn a rose to iron or making her turn brass to copper, the hardest basic transmutations. Sophie tucked both ideas away, then closed her mind and picked up her books like nothing had happened. She'd expected to feel triumphant. Now she had a fighting chance. Plus, she was right. Lady Galvin was giving her the hardest challenges to try to fail her, and she thwarted her plan. So why did she feel like she'd eaten a huge bowl of slime? Distracted and uncomfortable, she spilled the gas rooms and made the whole room reek of rotten fungus. Study hall was worse. Everyone pored over their notes while Sophie sat frozen,
afraid to open her books. By the time she got home, she was on the verge of tears. She couldn't touch her dinner, couldn't bear the concerned looks on Grady's and Edeline's faces. She didn't deserve sympathy. She didn't deserve anything. She hid in her room the rest of the night. Sleep was a lost cause. Alone in the darkness, with a snoring imp shattering the silence, and Ella in her arms, she forced herself to admit the truth. She'd broken the rules for telepaths. Even worse, she'd cheated. Just thinking the word made her skin crawl. From now on, anything she accomplished at Foxfire would be because she cheated on her alchemy exam. Could she really live with that? No. But what could she do? How could she study without focusing on those things? And if she didn't study them, she'd be sure to fail. It wasn't like she could tell Lady Galvin what happened. She wasn't allowed to tell anyone about her telepathy. She had to cheat now. No way around it. Unless... Her heart sank as another option occurred to her. It was far from ideal, but it was her only way out. And better than living with guilt for the rest of her life. Fear weighed her down as she crept out of bed and dug out the imparter Alden had given her. But she had to do this now, before she changed her mind. She cleared her throat, took a deep breath, and forced her lips to say three words she was dreading. Show me Alden. 26. Dame Alina's office was a triangular room with glass walls and a high-pointed ceiling at the apex of the pyramid at Foxfire. Morning sunlight streamed through the clear windows, but every other pane was a mirror, tilted at just the right angle to show Dame Alina's reflection as she sat behind her mirrored desk, examining her hair from all sides. Sophie kept her eyes on her hands as she confessed her crime. She didn't want to see the disappointment on Alden's or Tyrgan's face, or Dame Alina's reflections glaring at her from every direction. This was so much harder than telling Grady and Edeline before she left for school. They'd just nodded, forgave her, and hoped she didn't get in too much trouble.
What do you think, Dame Alina?
Alden asked when Sophie finished. His voice was neutral. Not angry, but not gentle either. Dame Alina pursed her lips.
She violated the ethical regulations of telepathy.
She did, indeed,
Tyrgan murmured.
And I'm sure some here feel she should be exiled for that.
He glared at Alden. Sophie froze. Would the council exile her? And here she thought all she was facing was expulsion. Alden sighed.
No one is suggesting anything of the sort.
Sophie released the breath she'd been holding.
Right, Tyrgan grumbled. Because it would be absurd to exile an innocent girl, but a man with a family to care for.
I will not have this argument again, Tyrgan. It was the council's ruling. I had no choice but to obey.
There's always a choice,
Tyrgan insisted quietly. Sophie knew they were talking about Prentice, and she knew she should be curious. But ever since she realized he was the one who'd abandoned her, she didn't want to be interested in what had happened to him. It hurt too much to think about.
Now, boys, Dame Alina said, rising from her chair with an elegant flourish.
She smoothed her hair in her dozens of reflections.
Can't we play nice?
No one said anything. Dame Alina sighed. Then she turned to Alden, flashing a wide smile.
What do you think the punishment should be?
Tyrgan snorted.
Yes, let's leave it up to him. Why bother asking her telepathy mentor
how she should be punished for violating the rules of telepathy.
He's the one reporting on her to the council,
Damelina argued. Sophie had to stifle her gasp. Alden was reporting on her too? How closely was the council watching her?
Yes. Everyone knows he's good at that, Tyrgin growled.
Alden sighed, but said nothing.
Don't forget your place, Sir Tyrgin,
Damelina said icily.
As long as you are a mentor, you will respect my authority. And I'd like to know what Alden advises.
Of course you do,
he said under his breath.
Everyone knows how you favor him.
Excuse me? Damelina hissed.
Alden closed his eyes, shaking his head. But Tyrgin straightened his shoulders, like he wasn't backing down.
It's hardly a secret that you tried to stop his wedding to Della.
Really?
Sophie blurted, unable to stop herself. Damelina flushed bright red, and her mouth flapped a few times, like she wanted to speak, but couldn't get her tongue to work. Alden ran his hands through his hair.
All of that is neither here nor there. Isn't it?
Tyrgin asked.
This whole process is pointless. Sophie won a pardon from the splotching match. Can't she hand that over and consider it punishment served?
And allow her to believe that cheating is tolerated?
Damelina huffed, still struggling to recover her dignity.
Certainly not.
But she didn't actually cheat,
Tyrgin pointed out.
And the fact that we're here at all tells us she regrets it. She didn't have to confess,
Alden added. Tyrgin stared at him for a second, like he couldn't believe they were on the same side.
She should still have to serve detention, at minimum,
Damelina insisted.
That's ridiculous,
Tyrgin argued.
Can I say something?
Sophie asked, stunned by her sudden courage. Her mouth went dry as they all turned to stare at her.
I'll serve the detention.
Seeing how she'd disappointed everyone made her ill. She didn't deserve to get off easy. And the smile hiding in the corners of Alden's mouth told her she'd made the right decision. Damelina nodded.
Good. Then I'm assigning you detention until the end of midterms. And you are not to tell anyone the reason you're being punished. Is that clear?
What will you tell Lady Galvin? Sophie asked.
I'll explain the situation to her. No reason to worry.
The warmth in Alden's voice melted the sickening guilt in her stomach. It wasn't a perfect solution, but at least she'd be able to sleep at night again. Well, once she stopped worrying about her midterms. And Bronte, one problem at a time. It was becoming a theme in her life.
Where are you going?
Dex asked, when Sophie turned to head away from the cafeteria. So much for her plan of slipping away unnoticed. She stared at her feet.
I can't sit with you guys today. I have detention.
Detention? They all repeated, loud enough to turn a few heads.
How long do you have it for?
Dex asked.
Till the end of midterms. She mumbled.
The end of midterms?
Jency whistled.
Dude, what'd you do?
I don't want to talk about it.
She gave a small smile and bolted before they could ask more questions. The detention hall was in the glass pyramid, one floor beneath Dame Alina's office. The ceiling was low, and the windows blocked more light than they let in, giving the room a gloomy atmosphere. Sophie tried to sneak in without being seen by the 20 or so other kids, but Sir Conley recognized her from their elementalism sessions.
Welcome, Miss Foster, he announced, and every head turned her way.
He brushed a hand across his long, dark hair and waved toward the rows of uncomfortable desks.
Take a seat and settle in. I have quite a treat for everyone today.
She ignored the stares as she sank into the first empty chair. She caught Keefe's eye from a desk in the corner. He grinned and gave her a thumbs up.
Ready for more siren song?
Sir Conley asked. Everyone groaned.
You have no appreciation for art or nature, he grumbled, clapping his hands.
An ear-splittingly shrill whine, part whale song, part nails on a chalkboard, with just the right amount of screaming toddler, reverberated through the room.
Uncover those ears. I am broadening your horizons, and you will listen to every note.
Everyone glared at him as they lowered their hands.
What are you in for?
Keefe asked with a crooked smile. Somehow he'd slipped into the empty desk behind her.
None of your business, she whispered.
He laughed.
You keep claiming you're not mysterious. But who are you kidding?
She sighed. What are you doing here?
Remember the regrod someone put in Dame Alina's office a few months ago?
That was you?
Of course. Took her long enough to trace it back to me.
He laughed, not even a little repentant.
Will you at least tell me how long I'll get to enjoy your company here?
She bit her lip.
Till the end of midterms.
Sounds like Miss Foster did something very bad. In the future, you should leave the mischief-making to me.
Sophie cringed as a shrill whine rang through the air.
Is it always this loud?
Oh no, that's just Sir Conley. Tomorrow, it's Lady Belva.
What's her brand of torture?
You'll see.
Ballroom dancing. That was Lady Belva's idea of punishment. Given the choice, Sophie would have taken the screeching sirens any day. The desks were shoved aside so the dances could be done in a line, like at old Edwardian balls. Keefe tried to grab her as his partner, but Lady Belva claimed him for herself and paired Sophie with Valen, one of Jensi's greasy ponytailed friends. His palms were cold and sticky, and a blob of drool settled in the corner of his mouth and never went away. Keefe snickered every time it was her turn to promenade through the other dancers on Valen's sweaty arm. She'd never been so happy to hear the bells chime the end of lunch.
I hope you know, Valen is in love with you now,
Keefe teased when he caught up with her in the hall.
And you would know that because?
Please. You could see the stars in his eyes all the way across the room. They shine brighter than that blob of spit on his lips.
She couldn't help laughing.
You're terrible.
I know.
He grinned wickedly.
But I'm serious. I bumped his arm on my way out the door, and he was crushing hard. The Sophie Foster fan club has a slobbery new member.
She opened her mouth to argue when she caught what he'd said.
Wait, are you an empath?
He winked, reaching for her hand.
Want me to tell you what you're feeling?
She jerked away.
Thanks, I'll pass.
Too bad. I can read what you're feeling even without physical contact.
His voice shifted up a few octaves as he fanned the air.
I hope Keefe's right about Valen liking me. Guys who drool are so cute.
Will you keep your voice down?
She hissed, glancing around to make sure no one was within earshot. Keefe laughed. He fanned the air again.
Now I can tell you're embarrassed. And a tiny bit irritated.
You're wrong. I'm just irritated.
Nah, you're flattered.
He scooted away before she could shove him. They walked in silence for a minute before Sophie's eyes dropped to her feet.
Could you really feel that I was irritated? Or were you guessing?
You look worried.
You wouldn't have something to hide, would you? A secret crush, maybe?
Never mind. Forget I asked. He cracked up.
It's almost too easy to annoy you, you know that?
She sighed.
Oh, all right. If you must know, yes. Your emotions are a little stronger than others. I can't really understand what they are, but I can feel them. And no, I don't know why, in case you're going to ask. Scored me major points with my empathy mentor when I told him, though.
She wasn't quite sure what to say to that, so they walked in silence until the hallway forked, and she went left at the same time Keith turned right.
See you tomorrow in detention, he said with a smirk. It's Lady Galvin. Hope you're good at ironing. It probably wouldn't be good to burn more holes in her capes.
He was gone before she could ask him if he was joking. Keith wasn't joking. Lady Galvin brought an enormous stack of capes for the detained prodigies to iron and hang as their punishment. Sophie wasn't allowed anywhere near them, forced instead to sit alone in the corner while Keith winked at her and Valen stared and drooled. She wasn't sure which was worse. She spent most of the time glaring at the level on her nexus, which still hadn't increased, despite practicing leaps with Grady. He kept telling her to give her brain time to get used to it. She was learning an entirely different way of making her mind work. But it was still annoying. She flipped the Nexus over so she couldn't see the meter anymore, and her eyes found the sparkly aquamarine stone. Her mind wandered automatically to Fitz. Someone cleared his throat. Sophie locked eyes with Keith. She turned away when he raised one eyebrow. It was a coincidence, she told herself. There was no way he could feel what she was feeling from all the way across the room. No empaths were that powerful. Still, she kept her mind on mundane things until the bells chimed.
Oh, Miss Foster,
Lady Galvin called when she was halfway out the door.
How's your studying going?
Her mouth went dry. Good.
Glad to hear it. You're going to need it.
She nodded and turned to leave.
You might want to brush up on iron purification, she added quietly.
Sophie spun back around.
Iron purification?
In case you've been wondering what to study, your exam will be in that vein. Even you should be able to handle that.
Lady Galvin waved her away, and Sophie left the room in a daze. Did she really tell her what would be on the test? Did she really pick iron purification, the easiest transmutation in alchemy?
How was detention?
Dex asked, when she found him at the lockers. Good, she said, still struggling to wrap her mind around what happened. Actually, it was better than good. But he was looking at her like she was a freak. So she didn't elaborate as she traded books. Hey, Dex?
Yeah?
Do you think you can help me practice iron purification this weekend? 27.
Everyone excited for midterms?
Dame Alina's projection chirped. Sophie locked her legs to keep her knees from banging together as Dame Alina continued in her annoyingly cheerful voice.
Your thinking caps are in your lockers. And remember, anyone found without one for the rest of the day will be disqualified for cheating. Is that clear?
She waited until everyone nodded.
Good. Have fun with midterms.
The chorus of groans echoed through the air as Dame Alina flashed away and everyone left for exams. Sophie froze, too terrified to move. Dex pulled her toward the atrium.
Will you relax? We've been practicing nonstop for a week. You're ready.
She nodded, afraid that if she spoke, her voice would tremble.
Her hands shook as she slipped on the thinking cap from her locker.
The white cloth wrapped around her head and hung in a point.
She glared at her reflection.
I look like a smurf.
The thick fabric consisted of an amalgam of metals, made to dull telepathic abilities and preserve the integrity of the exams. But the second she concentrated, she could feel Dex's voice, rushing through her mind like a blast of air. So it clearly didn't work on her. She wasn't surprised.
Well, here goes nothing.
She forced a smile before stumbling down the hall on shaky legs. She wrote an extensive essay on the human betrayal for Elven history, named more than 100 stars in the universe, and won the mind-over-matter debate with Sir Faxon in metaphysics. Tiergan was so amazed that the thinking cap had no effect on her, he gave her an automatic 100%. But her harder exams were after lunch, and alchemy was up first. Thinking about it made her stomach twist in ways that couldn't be natural. Lady Alexine allowed last-minute studying in detention. So Sophie spent the time mentally repeating Dex's purification tips.
"Will you chill?"
Keefe whispered. He waved at the air like he was trying to fan her negative vibes away.
"You're starting to stress me out."
"Aren't you nervous?"
"Nah, I'm awesome at tests. Photographic memory."
Sophie's eyes widened.
"You too?"
"You have a photographic memory? Then what are you freaking out about?"
"Because it doesn't help as much as you think."
"Sure it does. How else do you think I got a year ahead? It sure wasn't my work ethic."
"You're a year ahead?"
She'd never realized he was younger than Fitz.
"Yep. It's my big claim to fame. I skipped level one. Kinda like you."
"I didn't skip it. I missed it."
"Same thing."
It wasn't, but she didn't have time to argue. The bells chimed the end of lunch. For a second, she wasn't sure if she'd be able to get up. Keefe pulled her to her feet.
"That means it's time to go, in case you didn't realize. Seriously, Foster, you have to relax. You're going to make yourself sick."
"I feel sick," she admitted, wobbling. He jerked away.
"Thanks for the warning. No need to share that feeling. Look, I'm not good at the serious, supportive thing, but trust me, you're going to be fine."
"How do you know?"
He grinned.
"I have a feeling you can do pretty much anything you put your mind to. So stop doubting yourself and go prove me right. You know, so I can brag about it."
She couldn't help smiling.
"Thanks."
She took a deep, calming breath, squared her shoulders, and ordered her legs to walk. Mercifully, they obeyed. Lady Galvin was still setting up when she entered the room. Sophie's heart stalled when she saw the deep magenta berries and the rusty iron key. Lady Galvin may be giving Sophie the easiest discipline, but she certainly hadn't chosen an easy project.
"Does the cap even work on you?"
Lady Galvin asked, her eyes boring into Sophie's. Sophie shook her head, not quite brave enough to speak the words.
"Will you be picking the secrets out of my brain, then?"
She shook her head again.
"Why should I believe you?"
She cleared her throat and forced her mouth to work.
"I want to pass on my own."
Lady Galvin stared at her for a second before she blinked.
"You must purify the iron key using only ruckleberries. You have 55 minutes. I suggest you get started."
Ruckleberries were nasty, stinky little berries that brought impurities to the surface of a metal. They also made your skin wrinkle like an elderly human's if any of the juice got on you. And you'd smell like feet all day. So most alchemists used other methods to purify metal. But it was the assignment. Sophie had no choice but to dive in and do her best. Her palms were so sweaty, it was hard to hold the knife as she pierced the first berry and dribbled the juice on the key. She tried to work slow and careful, but a few drops still ended up on her pinky, making it look crinkled and haggard, and the glacial pace made her run out of time. Only 3/4 of the key had turned the gleaming black color she was going for, but she hoped it was enough. Lady Galvin's face was unreadable when she turned it in, and she glared at Sophie's wrinkled pinky. Points would clearly be deducted. Sophie finished out the day with a decent essay on ogres for multispecial studies, and a mediocre performance on her last two exams. Her channeling went well in phys ed, until Lady Alexine ran back and forth through the walls and broke her concentration, and she'd managed to bottle 3 different clouds in elementalism. But it took 4 tries to bottle a whirlwind, and the bottle had a crack from the pressure. Sir Conley didn't look impressed when she handed it in. Completely exhausted, she trudged back to the atrium to meet Dex.
"Well, that was brutal," he whined, slamming his locker closed. "How'd it go for you?"
She slumped against the wall. "I did the best I could."
"I guess you can't ask for more than that."
He tried to smooth his wild hat hair.
"You staying home tonight?"
"No. Grady and Edeline are taking me shopping."
"Whoa, that'll be the first time they've gone out in public together since, you know."
She did know. Grady and Edeline hadn't left the house together since Jolie died. Sophie told them they didn't have to, but Grady insisted. Foxfire tradition held that at the end of midterms, all the prodigies hung their thinking caps upside down from hooks on their lockers. The next day, everyone filled each other's hats with presents and opened them while their parents met with their mentors to find out their grades. Sophie's legs felt weak just thinking about it. She loved the idea of presents and hanging out with her friends. But having Grady and Edeline know if she failed before she did sent chills down her spine. Why couldn't elves send out report cards like human schools?
"Are you going shopping tonight?" she asked Dex.
"Nope. My parents think it's too much hassle to take all 4 of us, and they can never find babysitters for the triplets."
Bitterness edged into his voice.
"But don't worry." He nudged her arm. "I already made your present."
"You made my present?"
At first she was touched, but then she thought about it.
"Wait. It's not some solution that's going to turn my hair green, is it?"
Dex flashed a slightly evil grin.
"I guess you'll have to wait and see."
Grady and Edeline took Sophie to Atlantis. She hadn't been there since the day Alden and Fitz brought her, the day her human life ended. And she still hadn't figured out how to feel about any of that. She'd been with the elves a little more than 3 months now, and she'd come a long way. But she still had a long way to go. Passing her midterms was the biggest obstacle. She glared at her wrinkled pinky. How many points would she lose for the mistake? And how many more for not finishing? Grady squeezed her shoulder when he caught her tugging out an eyelash.
"Try to stop stressing, Sophie. We're here to have fun, not worry about grades."
She was tempted to point out that Grady and Edeline looked more stressed than she did. Their shoulders were rigid, their jaws set, and Edeline had deep shadows under her eyes. But they were making a huge sacrifice for her. The least she could do was enjoy herself. It took 7 stores to find suitable gifts for all of her friends. And with each store, Grady and Edeline looked more strained. The worst was the jewelry store. The woman who ran the shop remembered them. Apparently, they used to come in all the time to buy new charms for a charm bracelet, which had obviously belonged to Jolie. Sophie took Edeline's hand. Edeline jumped, Then her eyes welled with tears, and she squeezed Sophie's hand and didn't let go. Grady took Sophie's other hand, and they walked that way the rest of the night. When they got home, Grady stopped her on her way to her room.
I'm glad you came to live with us, Sophie. It's...
His mouth formed a word, then changed to a different one.
It's nice.
I'm glad I live here, too, she whispered.
He cleared his throat.
Big day tomorrow. Better get some sleep.
Good night, Grady.
Even though she was terrified about her exam grades, she fell asleep believing that everything was going to be okay. 28. Foxfire was almost unrecognizable. Silver streamers wrapped every tree, every shrub, every tower. Like the school had been toilet papered with tinsel. Confetti and flowers covered the floor, and giant bubbles filled with prizes floated through the halls. Prodigies ignored their parents as they dashed around, popping as many as they could. Grady and Adeline were overwhelmed by the crowd, so they went straight to where they'd meet for their first mentor appointment and left Sophie to celebrate on her own. She made her way to the level 4 wing, deciding to drop off Fitz's and Keefe's presents before meeting up with her friends. A tiny part of her had been hoping she'd find Fitz at his locker, but all she found was a long line of level 4 girls, all of whom glared at her as she added her small, teal-wrapped package to his nearly full hat. The glaring turned even uglier when she added a bright green box to Keefe's collection. Girls. She kept her head down as she slunk away, hurrying back toward her own wing, which was how she ended up plowing straight into Sir Tiergan. Sorry, she exclaimed, as he struggled to regain his balance. He'd been moving fast, and they'd crashed pretty hard. She rubbed her forehead where it had slammed into his elbow.
Sophie.
He glanced around, thin lines stretched across his brow.
What are you doing here?
I just came to drop off some gifts. Why? Is everything okay?
He smiled, but it looked forced.
Of course. I just didn't expect to run into you here. Especially so... literally.
His smile turned real with his joke.
Well, well. Who do we have here?
Sophie's heart sank as she turned around, expecting to find Keefe with lots of prying questions and one of his trademark smirks. And he was there, but his grin was gone, and it wasn't he who'd spoken. A tall, slender man in a sapphire-encrusted navy blue cape stood next to him, studying Sophie intently. The family resemblance was striking, though Keefe's disheveled hairstyle, an untucked shirt, sharply contrasted his dad's slicked blonde hair and pristine tunic.
This must be the girl who was raised by humans,
he said, much louder than Sophie would have liked.
How curious to find her in the level 4 wing, talking to Foxfire's most infamous mentor.
Infamous?
Sophie couldn't help asking. She glanced at Keefe, but he was staring at the ground.
It was strange to see him so deflated, like he'd wilted in his father's presence.
Keefe's father grinned, an oily sort of smile that dripped with insincerity.
Few mentors have resigned, then returned years later, out of the blue, to train a mystery prodigy.
He winked with the last two words, like he knew exactly who the prodigy was. Sophie felt her cheeks flame and searched for some sort of lie, but Tiergan beat her to it.
Interesting theory, Cassius. Lord Cassius,
he corrected. Tiergan's jaw tightened.
Lord Cassius? But do you really think I could be tempted back by a little girl? Especially one performing so unremarkably
in her sessions?
She knew he didn't mean it, that Tyrgan was only trying to keep her telepathy hidden. But the words still stung. A lot.
Come on, Dad, Keith said, looking at Sophie, not his father.
His eyes radiated the apologies he couldn't say.
I'm sure Sophie, has somewhere she needs to be.
Cassius glared at his son.
Yes, of course. And I need to meet with your mentors. See how disappointing your scores will be this time.
Keith rolled his eyes as his father turned to Sophie with another fake smile.
Fascinating to meet you. I look forward to seeing what you can do.
Sophie nodded and took off down the hall without saying goodbye. She felt bad leaving Keith and Tyrgan that way, but she had to get away from that man. It wasn't because he was intimidating, though he was definitely that. She felt sorry for Keith, having to go home to a cold, critical father every day. But what she really didn't like was the way Cassius had looked at her, like he was trying to see through her, and the last thing he'd said, I look forward to seeing what you can do. Almost like he knew something she didn't. Totally gave her the creeps. It was a relief to reach the safety of the level 2 wing, which was packed with prodigies running around. Popping the prize-filled bubbles, she poked a bubble floating by her locker, and a box of prattles dropped into her hands.
Good catch, Dex said, running up beside her.
He jumped for a bubble, but didn't quite reach it. Before he could try again, Stina shoved by, raised a bony arm, and popped it. She waved the bottle of lushberry juice in Dex's face.
Must get frustrating being shorter than the average dwarf.
Sophie snorted.
This coming from someone who looks like a giant lollipop. If your head gets any bigger, you'll topple over.
Dex cracked up.
Awfully brave words coming from a girl who's going to flunk out of here today, Stina growled.
Sophie opened her mouth, but couldn't find a snappy comeback. Stina could be right. And Sophie was trying very hard not to think about that, especially after Tyrgan's comment. Stina giggled.
Enjoy your last day at Foxfire, loser.
She bumped Sophie into the wall and stalked away.
Don't let her get to you. And if Lady Galvin fails you, I'll organize a protest.
Dex pointed to her thinking cap, which was overflowing with presents.
Look at how many people care about you here.
He frowned at his own, half-empty cap. Sophie nudged his arm, pulled a package from her satchel. The Disneyland watch she'd been wearing when she moved to the Lost Cities. She figured that he'd get a kick out of that, and dropped it in. He grinned, flashing his dimples.
I slipped your present in before you got here.
His eyes dropped to his feet.
I hope you like it.
I'll love it. Just let me drop off Bianna's gift, and we'll go to the cafeteria.
Ugh, why did you buy Bianna a present?
She's my friend.
Yeah, and like a month ago, you guys hated each other.
That was a misunderstanding.
Yeah, well, I don't trust her. I don't think you should either. Why would she reach out to you for...
Sophie shushed him as Bianna entered the atrium, followed by Maruka. They looked like they were talking, but when Sophie got closer, she realized they were arguing. Bianna bit her lip.
Oh, hey, Sophie.
Maruka glared at Bianna. Sophie cleared her throat.
Sorry, I just wanted to drop this off.
She handed Bianna a pink box, the charm bracelet she'd bought her, and turned to leave.
Wait.
Bianna pulled out a slim purple parcel and handed it to Sophie.
You're coming over for dinner tonight, right?
Of course. I can't wait. Well, I'll see you later, Sophie said,
wondering why Maruka was glaring at her. Then again, so was Dex.
What? She asked as soon as they were out of earshot.
You're going over there for dinner?
He said something else too, but the chiming bells drowned him out. Sophie froze. The bells signaled the start of parent-mentor conferences, which meant Grady and Edeline were finding out right now if she was going to stay at Foxfire. Dex dragged her to the celebration feast in the cafeteria, but Sophie couldn't relax, even surrounded by friends. The bells chimed every 20 minutes. 4 had already passed, which meant in 20 minutes, Grady and Edeline would know if she'd failed alchemy. Her palms were so damp, she struggled to unwrap her presents.
"What do we have here?"
Keith asked, snatching a red box from her thinking cap. He was definitely back to his old self without his father around. He glanced at the card and cracked up.
"Dear Sophie, I really enjoyed our dance, and I hope we can do it again sometime. Love, Valen."
Her face burned as everyone at the table laughed. Even Fitz.
"Who's Valen?" Dex asked.
"Vice president of the Sophie Foster fan club. Don't worry, I'm president, so I'll take care of her."
He winked as he tossed the present back to her.
"Go on, open it."
There didn't seem to be a way to avoid it, so she tore off the paper, wishing she could disappear when she unwrapped a bracelet of little heart charms. Keith cracked up again.
"Aw, Foster has a boyfriend."
"She does not," Dex snapped. "You don't, right?"
She shook her head so hard, her brain rattled.
"I'm just teasing. Sheesh."
Keith nudged Dex's arm, then grinned at Sophie.
"Interesting."
"What?"
Dex asked.
"Which one's your gift, Dex?" Sophie interrupted.
She didn't have to be a mind reader to know what Keith was going to tease Dex about. Dex glared at Keith as he grabbed a small package wrapped in plain white paper and handed it to Sophie.
"Sorry, we didn't have any ribbon."
"Please, I still can't believe you made me something."
She tore through the paper and gasped.
"My iPod!"
She tapped the screen, and the gadget sprang to life.
"Yeah."
He pointed to a green rectangle about the size of his fingernail, set into the back.
"It's solar-powered now, and it has a speaker in case you don't want to use those ear thingies."
She stared at Dex for a minute. So amazed, she wanted to hug him. She knew Keith would have a field day, though, so she fought the urge.
"This is amazing, Dex. How did you do it?"
He shrugged, pink coloring his cheeks.
"Well, thank you. Best gift ever."
"I don't know," Keith interrupted. "You haven't opened mine yet."
She bit her lip, a little afraid of what Keith might give her.
"Which one's yours?"
"Your hat was overflowing, so it's waiting in your locker."
"How did you get in my locker?"
"I have my methods."
She shook her head in disbelief as Morella shoved a box wrapped with crooked green paper into her hands.
"Open mine next."
Morella gave her a variety pack of flavored air. Plus, she got a ton of candy from prodigies she barely knew. Biana gave her a set of edible lip glosses, and Jensi gave her a speckled spider snapper, a plant that fed off spiders. Clearly, he didn't know how to shop for girls. The only real disappointment was Fitz's gift. He gave her a Riddler, a pen that only writes the words of a riddle until someone writes the correct answer. It was kind of cool, except he also gave one to everyone else. She'd spent forever trying to find him something personal, settling on a miniature Albertosaurus covered in deep violet feathers. She knew it was silly, but it reminded her of the day they met. And in the card, she thanked him for showing her what dinosaurs really looked like. Fitz giving her a fancy pen, especially the same fancy pen he gave everyone else, made it seem like he hadn't thought about her at all. But maybe he hadn't. He'd hardly looked at her gift when he opened it. Too distracted by the tunic Keith gave him, which had, "I know what you're thinking.
and you should be ashamed of yourself, embroidered across the front. She tried not to let that bother her.